This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us...
Remai here.
Stephanie O'Connell.
And Vicky Marie Buchanan. So, welcome Remai and Steffi. But Remai, you are the star undoubtedly in this conversation, because in just under 3 weeks you are turning 100 years old.
Yes.
It's awesome, isn't it? Really, it's amazing.
Well, I hope to make it.
I'm sure you will. So, lots of memories must be flooding into your mind, and lots of feelings. It's a big era, isn't it?
Yes.
So, let's go back a little bit. You were born. Tell us about where you were born.
Canberra. A nursing home in Whanganui.
So that was on the 2nd of April...
1923.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Is that hospital still going strong?
It became flats. I think it's flats now.
Right. Okay.
It's still there in its entirety.
Right. So you grew up, your childhood in... Whanganui?
Yes. Well, at a farm that was 16 miles out of Whanganui,
mm-hmm.
and very isolated.
Right.
As you can see.
So up here on the wall, for the listeners, there's a lovely landscape picture of, now how do we say that, Mangaiti, is it?
Mangaiti Farm, yes.
Mangaiti Farm, and that's just north of Whanganui.
Yes, and inland.
Right.
Yes.
So your parents were farmers as well, obviously?
Well, my mother was 19 when she married my father. She had lived in hotels because her parents had hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been to boarding school.
Right.
And my father had been at the First World War. He went in 1916.
Right.
Came back in 1919. Fortunately, he had no actual problems.
Right.
And so they came from very different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So she went up there to live. They would only go out about once a month.
Mm-hmm.
There were men working on the farm as well, so she had to feed them.
Mm. So very, very isolated. So
very,
hard.
Very isolated,
so
yes.
And you grew up...
And I grew up, well, when I was five, my mother started teaching me by correspondence.
Right.
My father made a desk for me out of two benzene cases.
Yes,
and varnished it all, and so he used to carry that in and put that in the kitchen so that I would do my lessons.
Mm.
I did it to the standard of a school in that
right.
I started at 9 and I finished at 3
right.
with an hour off in the middle.
Right.
And at morning tea time at 10:30, I'd have an apple or an orange or something. Which I was doing at that time in the morning,
mm-hmm.
Sitting on a fence and eating an orange,
yeah.
And the Napier earthquake came.
Oh my goodness!
And it shook the fence, and my father was. It was Monday morning. My father was helping my mother with the washing in the wash house, and there was a tank outside, and the water was gushing out of this tank.
Yes.
And he came and he stood in the doorway like this, and
yes.
he said, "Watch
Hands
me."
Up, yes, yes, the yes, yes.
And he would just watch me till so that I didn't hurt myself if
yes.
I fell off, which I didn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bernard was in the back room.
Oh, Bernard was only a baby, so my mother went into the house and carried him out.
Gosh, and that's scary. Yes. So you are one of how many brothers and sisters?
Oh, I was the oldest, mm-hmm. and Bernard was 3 years younger than me, mm-hmm. and then Michael was 6 years younger than that. That right. was all the family there, yes.
So you've mentioned already something, you're very, very isolated and you're eating an orange, and I'm thinking the orange is grown on the farm, or how did
no.
you get your shopping? How did you get your food?
Well, they went, in the very beginning, they used to do the shopping once a month.
Right.
And they had no car.
No.
So they came up, originally my mother arrived in a cart with
right.
a horse.
Yes.
She had her trousseau and all the farm things the farm needed, and
yes.
she was sitting on a sofa
yes.
in the cart, and she had her trousseau with her
yes.
too.
Her mother was very, very particular.
Oh
wasn't
yes,
she?
And she
so she had 12 of everything.
12 gave them 12 sheets, 12 towels. You know, oh. 12 of everything.
What was
and
her name? What was her name?
Rima's mother.
Yes,
Burse. Her name was Gertrude
yeah. Thelma.
Burse.
Thelma.
My mother was Thelma Burse.
Right,
her mother
right.
was Gertrude. Yes.
Right, right.
And but I still, when I got married, my mother gave me some of those towels. Were still
yes, yes.
They
yes.
were white towels with black Grecian key pattern on the bottom.
Yes,
of the
very
bottom.
Suitable for the farm.
Yeah, yeah.
White towels. For
yes,
a farm.
No, they were always the baby towels.
Right,
ones,
right.
Yes.
And so, and then because you're so isolated, when did you get together? Like, where was your nearest neighbour, and how did you get together?
That wasn't easy.
No.
No, there were men, as I told you before, working on the farm. So, that, and my mother always had tea at 6 o'clock at night. So, no matter where they were, they always seemed to manage to be home to have
dinner.
Half past five, they'd hear them coming on the horses, and they'd come in. And the neighbours were a lot older than my. There was only 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
Only four other houses in that area,
mm-hmm.
and they were all about a couple of miles apart.
Right.
And they were all elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
We were the only children there for, oh, I suppose, 6 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, maybe longer even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and once a month you'd go shopping. Did you have a get-together at your homes and say hi
no.
to each other, compare what's going on? And
no, they didn't do anything
no.
like that. And, of course, there was no radio. And
no.
We had, there was no power there. In fact, there's still no power there.
Oh,
they,
so...
They've got generators up there.
Okay,
now.
So you used generators when
yeah,
you were growing
yeah.
up as well?
No, candles.
No, we didn't.
Yeah,
we
yes.
just had candles and...
Yeah.
And a Primus.
Yes.
In the morning, my father would always get up first, and he would light the Primus,
right.
which was kerosene
yes, yes.
with a bit of methylated
yes.
spirits in it to set
yeah.
it going. And he would boil the kettle. The kettle was a little flat one like that that
right.
just sat on the top.
Right.
And he would make my mother a cup of tea and take it up to the bedroom.
Right.
While he was doing that, the kettle was boiling again. He was very efficient. And he would make the porridge.
Right.
And then we all had porridge all our lives. So
right.
You had a wood stove, didn't you?
We had a
cook
wood stove. Yeah, wood stove.
Yes,
as well.
I was thinking
yes.
you must have something
mm.
there. Yeah.
But that was just the breakfast part of
yes,
it.
Yes.
And then he would also make toast on it, but I had a sort of toaster thing he put on top.
Gosh, he was very well organised, wasn't he, doing that?
Yeah, but that was the best that they could do. Then there was a wooden stove that my mother cooked on, and it had a sort of a thing on the top of it that you could air clothes on.
Yes, a dryer. A rack. Yes.
Yeah, a rack. Good girl.
Yeah.
I can't forget. That's another thing. And then on the side of it was a little tank.
Right.
It held 8. I suppose they would be 2 litres, wouldn't they? She had a dipper that she had to fill it with from the tank.
Right, right.
Took 8 trips across.
Right, right, yes.
To get it.
Yes.
And it had a tap down on
yes.
the side, which
yeah.
you could get it out from there.
Right.
And And later on, when Christy came to stay there first...
Christy was Remo's husband.
Oh, yeah, right,
yes.
Right.
Before we were married, he was visiting. And he saw my mother doing this tripping. And he said, you know, you could have the tap laid on there. And so my father had... had a his leg off
from the war?
But that would have been long before that, though, wouldn't it?
No, that's when he...
When you were engaged, he hadn't had it off then.
So did he...
It was before you were married.
No, he was... He died a year after I got married.
Yes, but he didn't have his leg off when you were engaged, did he? Before you got engaged.
I can't remember. No. That or the leg was bad in
the eye.
He couldn't move around very much. And so Christy went out and he got some pipes and threaded the pipes from the tanks through the brick chimney and put a tap on it, you know, over the thing. And my mother went up and she was so excited about this, you know.
She went running water in the kitchen.
Yes,
first time.
Backwards and forwards. Oh.
She went and got my father. And I can see him now standing in the doorway with bad leg up. And
she keeps saying, look, Bert, look what
Christy's done. And he said, little Mr. Fix-It.
I've got a little list for you. So, and the stove that you had, so you heated it with wood from the...
There were two sorts of wood. You had, because we were, as well as the farm took 2,000 acres.
Right.
But it was, not all of it was usable. A lot of it was bush, about 1,000, wouldn't be quite 1,000, about 1,000 acres of bush. So they had cleared some of it, but most of the clearing that they did was from Manuka scrub.
Right.
So you can see how hilly it was.
Very hilly, yes.
Yeah, so they...
Sorry.
They had to get wood. Well, the wood was... Rata and Myri. They were the two woods.
Right.
Now, there was plenty of rata on the farm, and people would be horrified now, I suppose, to hear that. But anyhow, that's what they used for the everyday.
Right.
And if my mother wanted to make a cake or to make a sponge, something like that, well, she put in Myri.
Right.
And that was faster.
Faster to burn.
You were a heater.
Oh, heated it up faster.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, the thought of that, isn't that interesting? It's sort of the culture of us making a sponge, and yet here we are with a wooden stove, and we're heating up Myri wood to keep that heat even for a sponge, isn't it, really?
Well, you think about it, she was 19 years old, she'd lived a fairly sheltered life, and here she was catering to... her family and workers who come in every day.
Yes.
She made the bread. She did it, baked everything.
Amazing.
From the very beginning, she made the bread, except on Mondays, when my father's cousin, Jack Roach, he lived and worked on the farm from his early days right through till he got married. And... he used to come up on a Monday and he would bring bread. Well, that would last till about Wednesday, and then my mother had to start making the bread. So she'd done that. It was really amazing when I come to think about it. This little, very much a little town girl that had she'd done a bit of housekeeping at home, I think, when her parents left the hotel.
Right. Yeah. And she was used to people if there was a hotel, she was growing up in the hotel,
and
the hotel worked. Yeah. She was used to people and that sort of thing as well. So you were growing up through all this period, and you said that, so basically your family were the only kids around in the area?
Yes.
Wow. Playing and downtime when you weren't studying, what did you do?
She had imaginary friends.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So tell her about your imaginary friends.
I had imaginary... Well, to get to the... there was a stage when the mail actually came. First of all, it came... 4 miles away, right. And someone had to go down to the boxes down there and get it.
On the horse.
Mm. Just a
clip-clop.
Then it came to our box, mm-hmm. and I was, as a young child, it must have come then, because I remember going out to get the mail.
Right.
It was called the Whanganui Chronicle.
Whanganui Chronicle, right, yes. Right. And
that was the paper, was it?
Yes. They were quite good because they had a lot of children's things in them,
yes,
too. There's always
yes.
something for the children
yeah,
in it.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I'd be bringing it in, and so I was talking to friends, and I had a friend called Dagi who lived in a piece of wood that was part of an old shed.
Right.
And you had Tronicle.
And I had Tronicle, yes.
Came from
Tronicle came with the Chronicle. And
right.
So I talked to her as I came in. Anyhow, so that was all right. They were my friends.
They were your imaginary friends.
Yes.
Right?
And then when Bernard came along, he had friends too.
Yeah.
And he had one called Sid Wart.
Oh, how gorgeous.
And Sid, I used to encourage him about, because I would talk to him, you know, about how
yeah.
Sid Wart and,
yeah.
and Sid Wart had a brother called Ted Wart.
Right. And you've still got these friends very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, well, then it would be Sid Wart and he'd be talking to Ted Wart,
yes.
you know.
Yeah.
And but of course I was being a bit naughty because I used to say, "What do you remember?"
That you said to him, Sid Wart rang today and he wanted you to go and play. and he said, but I told him you couldn't, you were busy. And Bernard used to say, but Remo,
I could have done it.
I could have gone, Remo.
Oh. Did you ever tell him that you were just teasing him?
No, I was part of it. Well, he was about 3 then, and I must have been just on 6, so I was really old enough
yes.
to know better.
Yes,
you were.
Yes. The big sister taking control. Oh, my goodness. That's gorgeous, though. I totally identify with that. There's a play, of course, now called The Invisible Friends. Have you ever read that play?
No.
I think it's by Alan Ayckbourn, but there is a play about invisible friends. Oh, how gorgeous. So you're creating your own play there,
yes,
really, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
So then how long were you on the farm? What happened at secondary school? Still correspondence school?
Well, no. When I got to intermediate,
right.
My mother then had Michael, and he was 2 years old then.
Right.
And it was getting more difficult for her to teach both of us.
Right.
And so I went to board with some family friends
right.
who lived in 102 Harrison Street. Recently I went to see a school friend who actually has turned 100, and she's in a nursing home on the other side of the road from 102 Harrison Street.
Yeah.
But they had...
the house is still there, isn't it?
It looks just the same.
Yeah,
right?
It's an old villa. So.
Yes,
so was that at Whanganui Intermediate?
I went to the convent, St Mary's Convent
right.
in Whanganui, which was in Grey Street but doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It had been a boys' primary school, because there was a family next door to us, a woman next door,
mm.
they'd be
mm.
4 miles away, I suppose,
mm.
and they had their eldest son was intellectually handicapped.
Right.
Well, they didn't realise it was, I don't think, but they were quite a wealthy family, and they sent their children to boarding school
at
quite an early age because they were living in this isolated area.
Mm.
But by the time Mervyn was 10, they said, well, he can't be taught anymore.
Mm.
So he came... Why did I start talking about Mervyn?
Because you were talking about boarding...
Right. Well, he went to boarding school there.
Mm. What was it like for you going to from being isolated on the farm and just playing with your brothers and creating your own little world there, and then going into town or the city of Whanganui. Was it a city then? I suppose it was.
Yes.
And then going to a big school, because it would be a big school for you, wouldn't it?
Well, it was, but the thing was that I went to Suitors. Now, this family were my grandparents' friends, so I didn't know them at all.
Yes.
But they had, the reason why I was able to go there was their eldest daughter became a Home of Compassion nun, and so her room was available.
Right.
So I went to stay with them. Mm. They had Jean later. She was a Home of Compassion nun. She'd been visiting some people. As a nurse visiting some people, and they got caught in a rainstorm and she got pneumonia and she died. She was only 28. But the next boy was Alan, and he was the same age as me. He was going to the marriage school because he was they finished the primary, and he went to the war as an airman, and he was a navigator on one of those big Lancasters that was shot down over the channel. So he was only about 23, I think, when he was killed. Sadness. And then the youngest one was that. It was John, and he was only 7. But he was the way that knew the way to school. He was the one that took me. Nearly 11. And he became a photographer. He had a big photography set. And he took the photos at our wedding.
So you maintained a contact with the Suitors all your life.
Yes, I did, yes.
So just getting back a little bit. It's quite all right. When you were at school, was there an adjustment for you, or had the correspondence, you felt you were up with it all, or socially?
I think I behaved in a rather strange fashion, because I remember... there's quite a big classroom, and as I was saying, this was an old, that's why I started talking about it. It used to be a boys' school, and there were huge rooms. And so we were sitting at the desks, you know, you had a desk each, and I was sitting in the front. She put me in the front row, and every now and then, instead of putting my hand up, I would go up and ask something, you know, and they had to explain to me that, you know, you stay in your seat and you put up your hand and you wait to be asked, you know. But they were very good. She was a very good, she was a nun, but she had been trained as a teacher before she entered, so she was an exceptionally, and she was a very good teacher.
Do you remember feeling anxious about going to school there when you were from home?
No, it was a bit of an adventure, you know, really. I did have to look after myself a bit more than I had, you know. But I did go home a lot of weekends. By this time, my mother and father had made this thing about coming to town on a Friday. As long as they were coming back on the Sunday, I would go home for the weekend. The horse and cart went in 1920. My grandfather was ill, and my father had to buy a car, so he bought a beauty Ford. And
tell them about, just before you go any further, about Bernard.
So we had this this beauty Ford, and it was canvas windows, fairly high. So we were very proud of this beauty Ford, and especially Bernard. He was skiting one day about that beauty Ford, you know. And I
How old was Bernard at this point?
Oh, I suppose he's about 4.
Oh. Not very old.
And I said...
once again teasing him.
He was... And I said... Oh, Jackson. So this is the people that had the intellectually handicapped men. They've got a beauty Ford too. And he said, I'll wipe all the beauty off it.
At 4.
But we still didn't go to town very often.
But once a week, obviously, to do shopping. And
well, no, not even that. We used to go. Might be once a fortnight by But they would actually stay in town with some friends of my mother's. Mm. And they had a gramophone shop, these people. And so we got our first gramophone when we were quite young.
For years and years,
no matter what my mother and father bought when they went to town, they always bought a record and a book.
Yes.
One or other would buy whichever, you know.
Yes, yes.
So there was a young fellow who was working for us. He was 16. He came to work for us, and he must have answered an ad or something. And we didn't know anything about him, really. Mm. And the first Friday that he was home, he asked my father if he could borrow the horse to ride to town on Saturday, because he had to report to the police.
Oh, okay.
And it turned out that he'd been in a borstal.
Oh, okay.
From when he was in Borstal. Mm. And why he was there was his brother, who was older than him, had stolen a yacht thing. It's in the Whanganui.
I was in the town there. Yeah.
And they'd been caught.
Right.
And, Joe was in it too.
Yeah.
And then later on, he stayed with us for four years, till he was 20.
Was it just circumstances for him? Like, was he an orphan?
Yes, he was an orphan. Right. His mother had died of TB. Right. Yes, right. Yeah.
And there wasn't much hope for kids like that in those days, were there? But unless they got into a family
He was about 20, I think. The brother got out. The brother had been in Borstal and Joe had only gone in for a short period.
Right.
And the other, because he was young, I suppose, and the other one had.
It was a hard time, wasn't it? And then by this stage, the war, Second World, 1923, I'm just doing a mental calculation there, that we're coming up to World War II, aren't we? 39, wasn't it?
Well, there was a big change between the slump years, which we're talking about now.
Right. So that was
28, 29, wasn't it? The slump, 28,
29. And into the 30s and even 31, we were still feeling it.
And that was post-World War One, wasn't it?
Yes.
You don't hear about that so much.
No. Things were quite good after the First World War for a very short period, and then the slump came in. Mm. Well, then they had this other slump, which was longer lasting, really, in this other period.
Right.
His brother got out of jail or Borstal, I don't know where he was, and he wanted Joe to go to Wellington.
To work
with him, and I suppose it was boring for him up there, with just two little kids and no other people. Yeah. There were no other young people at all in the whole area.
But also, it's pull of his family as well, probably. It's the pull of his family as well.
He didn't really have any family.
His brother, though, was his family.
What you did give him at that time was a safe, secure place and a home and values.
In those formative years,
and that was really, really important.
Well, he himself was a very, very honest boy.
Right.
And there was never any problem with him. Yeah. He was very good to us.
Yeah.
He bought us. We used to buy us records. He bought me the Bo Peep story and a whole lot of things
on the
just to tell you, if you're interested, that boy. shortly after he'd been gone into town, there was a notice in the paper to say that Joseph James Patterson had been found drowned in the Whanganui River. And then it went on to say that they were in trouble about some. Oh. So the brother had got him into trouble again. And they think he might have committed suicide.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. How old was
what
he?
An awful
end. Oh, he's about, I don't know. I remember seeing it in the paper. So, oh, yeah. So it must have been, you know, 1934, 35.
That's
sad.
Oh, that is a real sad ending, isn't it?
Oh. This is part one of three. Listen next week for part two. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.